This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast. I'm Anand Krishnan, your host for today. In this episode, we will be discussing Prime Minister Narendra Modi's two-day visit to Bangladesh. We will be focusing on the takeaways for the India-Bangladesh relationship, as well as looking at the broader significance and symbolism of his visit, which was timed to mark the 50th anniversary celebrations currently underway in Bangladesh to mark its liberation. I'm joined today by Suhasini Haider, who's a Hindu's diplomatic affairs editor, national editor in New Delhi, and Kalol Bhattacharji, who covers foreign affairs for The Hindu in New Delhi. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anand.
Thanks, Anand.
Kalol, if I can come to you first, you've been reporting on the visit, and today you reported on the joint statement as well as the main takeaways. Why don't you give our listeners a sense of what for you were some of the most important things to emerge from the visit and the joint statement that came out yesterday?
Well, to understand this visit, we have to really go to Mr. Modi's last visit, which took place in June 2015. Immediately after that visit, despite the fact that the visit led to the sealing of the Indo-Bangla land boundary agreement, what we saw was not really the celebration of the agreement itself, but the opening up of the National Register for Citizens in India.
Yeah, so therefore, you know, this visit is therefore very significant because of the reason that finally it took place, you know, though it is 1 year late because of the pandemic. But nevertheless, the official interactions were maintained, and Mr. Harshvardhan Shringla was sent to Dhaka in a remarkable, you know, even in the middle of the pandemic, that sort of an outreach. So he did manage to repair some of that tie, you know, that he himself had invested earlier when he was the High Commissioner there. And before that, he was the person in charge of India-Bangladesh relation in the Ministry of External Affairs. So I would say that the continuity of the concerns remain in the joint statement. Number one, because the river water issue has not been resolved so far to Bangladesh's satisfaction. The Teesta water issue remains. Bangladesh has made a very strong reference to that matter. Number two, the border killings, and I'm quite surprised that India has actually allowed that to remain in the joint statement, that in Bangladesh's position that border killing should come to zero has been accepted in the joint statement. So these two are the biggest Bangladeshi concerns, and they have found space in the joint statement, you know, and that, according to me, is quite a show of perhaps her assertiveness, Sheikh Hasina's assertiveness as far as her relation with India is concerned.
Suhasini, coming to you, I think Kalol makes a good point that in some sense, just the visit going ahead is on some level important in of itself. Given the huge politics surrounding CAA, NRC, and what happened over the last year and some. So what's your sense of how this whole CAA, NRC issue is now playing in the India-Bangladesh relationship? Has it had an impact domestically in India, for instance, in this current ongoing election season, over how it's being brought up by the BJP?
Anant, I think it's very clear that over the last year, as Kalol pointed out, there's been disquiet in Bangladesh. And we also heard, in fact, for the first time, some negative feedback coming from Afghanistan, obviously Pakistan as well, about the CAA. And we do know for a fact that despite the fact that the government passed the bill in December 2019, it is yet to frame the rules. And it is the Home Minister himself who, while campaigning in West Bengal, said that those rules will be framed, but they cannot be done right now. So there is a general sense that India is seeing the kind of pushback in the neighborhood to the bill, and we'll take that into account as it decides exactly when it can frame the law so that those who were supposed to be beneficiaries of the law may finally actually get fast-track citizenship. But I think, that this visit of Prime Minister Modi is so much about the symbolism between the two ties. And it would seem to me the importance given both by Bangladesh and by India to make it clear that regardless of what are the differences between the two countries, and you can speak about a number of differences, there are a lot of areas of commonalities and growing relations over trade, connectivity, and other parts of the relationship. But really that they are bound together by the events of 50 years ago. That eventually what we are seeing in Bangladesh is a year-long celebration of Bangladesh's existence, of its liberation, that couldn't have come about without the assistance of India. So I think the larger theme of this visit by Prime Minister Modi, while of course, there were many, many smaller parts to it and also a lot of granular detail when it comes to that joint statement between them, I think the much bigger sentiment that went out was the symbolism of two countries that really were joined together in a common fight 50 years ago. They have in the past had ups and downs in the 80s and much of the 90s. They have been consolidating their relationship since 2008 when Prime Minister Hasina was re-elected for the past 15 years, really. But it is this moment, this 50 years since Bangladesh's liberation war, that today both countries want to celebrate and they want to celebrate together. And I think that's the message that really went out.
Before we come to some of the historical questions that have been triggered by this visit, something we've been hearing a lot about Suhasini's connectivity. And what was your sense of the message from Prime Minister Modi on connectivity, on this whole idea of the region being more open? And is there a fundamental contradiction between what we are saying to our neighbors, for example, on such visits, to what we've been saying at home? And how do we sort of resolve that contradiction?
Well, the neighborhood is always going to be an area of contradiction because it's where the rubber hits the road, in a sense. India has such large ambitions. It does have an ambition for itself. It has an ambition for itself in the region, in the neighborhood as well. And so when Prime Minister Modi writes in a Bangladeshi newspaper in the Daily Star, which is something we haven't perhaps seen as much before, and he says that he wants not only for India and Bangladesh, who have resolved their maritime and boundary ties between them, to really come together in a region that is closely integrated, deeply interlinked value chains. He talks about an open South Asia for economic activity. He's essentially speaking about that kind of ambition that one has for the entire region. Obviously, there are many hiccups. There is the entire problem, really, in South Asia, we have very little economic interconnectivity. I think it's just about 5% intra-trade in the SAARC region. And even if you weren't to count the problems with Pakistan, other connectivity ideas, for example, the one between Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, and Nepal, the BBIN that Prime Minister Modi sought to launch about in 2015, that hasn't gone anywhere soon. But I think what you're seeing is the idea of the ambition. And even just in this bilateral visit, the emphasis there on things like restoring the six pre-1965 railway links between the two countries, the port-to-port connectivity, as well as all the other connectivity, Bangladesh opening out its airports for Indian citizens in the Northeast states. These are all steps that could take us towards that idea.
Kalul, if I can come to you on the Teesta issue, that's something you reported in the newspaper today was something that Bangladesh raised forcefully. So just to give our listeners a broader understanding of the issue and how it figures in the relationship, what was there any headway made in this current visit?
Well, one of the issues that India has been concerned with is the reported Chinese project about dredging and developing the entire riverbed of Teesta, in the area where it causes the maximum damage in northeastern Bangladesh. There is a whole Chinese project about river management, especially targeting that part of the river where it really affects the farmers and it creates havoc every year for the infrastructure sector in Bangladesh. So the Chinese have come up with a solution that they would clean up the river and also but also allow auxiliary developments in around the river banks in Bangladesh, and that is a project that India has been cautiously watching. And I hear that Foreign Secretary Harshvardhan Shringla probably took it up with the Bangladeshi counterpart in his previous interactions, and there is every possibility that probably that figured from the Indian side in this round of discussion as well. That is, of course, the China issue as far as the Teesta River is concerned. But as we all can very well understand, that the main issue is the West Bengal Chief Minister's lack of commitment in getting the agreement done on, and that is something that is no solution to that so far. And though the Prime Minister has repeatedly expressed his commitment, the Prime Minister of India has repeatedly expressed his commitment, we know that there has been no support from the West Bengal side so far. So therefore, that really is not helping the Teesta agreement between India and Bangladesh. And that is pushing Bangladesh to take a hard position on its other projects on Teesta, be it with China or with the Asian Development Bank, many such other projects that are still hanging in the air as far as Teesta is concerned.
Right. And finally, yeah. Suhasini, coming to you, we will point our readers below this podcast to a really fascinating piece you had in the March 28th edition of The Hindu on the whole question of the anniversary of liberation and the history of that. Can you take our listeners through that, how this anniversary is bringing to fore some little known issues from 1971?
Well, the focus today is on India and Bangladesh in the present. But what we've seen in the last week has been a kind of, walk down memory lane for so many when it comes to the events of 1971. And particularly what we heard was Prime Minister Modi talking about his own, where he was in 1971. So he spoke about this little known fact that he was part of the opposition protests when it came to asking for Bangladeshi freedom, which got most of us going back to the record books and looking at just what was happening at this time in India vis-a-vis Bangladesh. Now, in March 25th, Operation Searchlight was launched. This was one of the most brutal campaigns by the Pakistani army. And March 26th, the day that the liberation of Bangladesh announcement declaration was made on behalf of Mujibur Rahman, that's the day that is being commemorated when Prime Minister Modi went to Bangladesh. After that, we saw a pogrom, a genocide that began. First, the targets were Bengali Hindus, but also political activists, teachers, students, that whole Dhaka University massacre, as well as other parts of society that were targeted very specifically by what was then the East Pakistani administration, the West Pakistani administration in East Pakistan. But we saw in India at the time was obvious horror over what was unfolding in Bangladesh. And by August, I think there were as many as 10 million refugees in India. Of course, the figures of how many were killed ranges between 300,000 to 3 million because there's so many different accounts, but it is believed that 3 million people were killed. Hundreds of thousands of women were raped. And as I said, 10 million refugees in India. Prime Minister Indira Gandhi at the time was still trying to take her position forward that actually Bangladeshi freedom was something that was inevitable. But it wasn't possible at the time because there wasn't international support. And India, particularly sensitive over the subject of Kashmir, wasn't prepared to go ahead if it was going to be pushed back by the entire international community. So one of the things Prime Minister Gandhi did at the time was to sign the Indo-Soviet Friendship and Cooperation Treaty, which really did help India in terms of not only the naval support from the Soviets, but also the Soviets kind of pushback against China, which is not as well known at the land boundaries in places in Central Asia and other parts. And it was then that the opposition, primarily the Jansangh, came out to protest against the Indo-Soviet treaty simply because they thought that this was going to slow down the process of the creation of Bangladesh. They wanted Indira Gandhi to recognize the provincial government of Bangladesh immediately. Of course, by then, the provincial government of Bangladesh was actually operating out of India. A lot of its work was being done in Kolkata in a small office of the RNAW intelligence agency. So when these protests happened, they courted arrest outside parliament. It wasn't necessarily a turning point. It wasn't, in fact, a turning point in the liberation war or what followed, because by December, India and Pakistan were at war. The Indian Army had entered and surrendered at Dhaka eventually happened. But the fact that the Prime Minister brought this nugget of history, if you like, up, got many people looking at all the various roles that people had held. And as my story points out, the particular role of the US that turned a complete blind eye to the massacres that were taking place because they were running their own dialogue with China at the time. And the memos that have come out of the White House at the time very clearly show the position and the policy that that the United States had decided to take, which culminated, if you like, with the US actually sending in its 7th Fleet to try and stop India or deter India from continuing on its path to help the liberation of Bangladesh. So there are so many emotions mixed in all of that. Even today, when we look at the problems between Bangladesh and India, and we look at the places where they're able to forge ahead, one really does get the sense that it is sentiment that overrides all else. In other words, when the two sides are able to make history together, for example, over the land boundary agreement or when they clear their maritime boundaries, the bump that relations get is quite inordinate. But on the other hand, it is these issues like Teesta that Kalol was talking about, like the presence of China, the border killings, for example, the comments we've heard from politicians in India talking about Bangladeshi immigrants. These are the smaller issues, it would look like, which become much bigger simply because of the deep sentiment between the two countries.
A fascinating period in history that's really been revisited thanks to the visit. What we will do is we will point our listeners to Suhasini's piece, and perhaps we'll also get Suhasini to recommend further readings for those of you who are further interested in this. Suhasini Haider and Kalol Bhattacharjee, thank you so much for joining us on this brief podcast today.
Thank you so much, Anand.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.